Welcome to part two of our interview with L. Sidney Fisher about the Devil's Board. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. Looking at the whole situation where it really escalated to the point where, you know, it seemed to be driving her to do its bidding, for lack of a better term, and seeing the whole picture of that point in time of where she really was almost, you know, being controlled in some way, shape, or form by what it wanted, to the point of it eventually ending. What was its mission? What was its goal? Did it have a clear mission or goal, or was it just to wreak havoc with people?
I really believe that it was just to wreak havoc with people, because it never really... Well, now, wait a minute. I will tell you this. This happened, though, near the end, right before the main all hell breaking loose, so to speak, near the end of this. But it did make comments when she would get it stirred up, and she would say things to it that would get it a little agitated, you know. Say, she might say things like, "I don't believe you," or whatever, trying to get a response out of it. It did tell her, "I'm going to make everyone pay for the bad time that I had there." But the thing is, when they would ask, "How are you going to make us pay?" it would be silent. There wouldn't be anything that would be said. Until near the end. That's when it really, really, really got scary. It never had a specific purpose as far as what it was going to do until toward the end. It basically was a strange relationship that she had with an invisible spirit that she talked to on a daily basis. And she thought it got to a point to where there was nobody else she could contact through the board, because he was always there every time. So this spirit was kind of like taking over the sessions, you know, when she would sit down and she was playing this thing. And typically you have two people. Got to a point where nobody else wanted to do this with her. Stephanie would do it with her most of the time. But then she and Josie played with her a time or two. But she actually got to a point where she'd just do this by herself. And like I said, when we'd walk in on it or walk in on her, whatever, she'd kind of get agitated and say, "You guys be quiet," or whatever, because that would break the concentration, she said. And Ron would leave. Ron would leave. So, but the interesting thing about it was, you know, the way that this actually wedged through relationships is because of the fussing and fighting that started going on between the group with Rachel and Josie and Nate and Spencer and those guys. And Rachel kept telling them, you know, you need to tell her to leave that thing alone. That gives me the creeps. Don't want it played there in the dorm where we're at. We've all got to live there. And I'm telling you, these are the things that can happen. And then when she's waking up and having experiencing furniture moving across the room, you know, something is already going on that can't be reversed. I mean, you know, something bad has already transpired. And so now you've got something that they don't really know how to deal with this. And so they don't really know how. I mean, they've awakened an angry spirit that they're using a board to talk to. And he has gained enough strength now to where they feel like he's haunting the freaking dorm. And he's in the room and stuff with them. And so they begin to argue, and you can see that in the book. They begin to argue in things amongst themselves. And Amber, who was a part of the group, or she was friends with some of them at some point, she just like becomes their enemy. And because she's bound and determined that that's her thing. She's going to play the board, and that's her new friend. Ron Banks is her new friend, and I think she trusts that. I think she's so mesmerized by it that she just can't let it go. And so, yeah, like you said, it becomes something to where it finally, after weeks, it does tell her, after telling her that, you know, the spirit had a very bad experience as a student there. And she's like, well, so what do you know, what are we going to do about it? Or, you know, what's the point? And he says, well, I'm going to make everybody pay. I'm going to make everybody pay for the bad things that happened to me while I was there.
Is that the point when all hell breaks loose? Is that what he's referring to, is making everybody pay? Did something happen?
Something did happen, yes, at the very end, toward the end. Now, you know, leading up to that point, not immediately when that happened, did he say, I'm going to make everybody pay for that. Then, you know, fast forward a few more weeks later, when she is sitting down with the board and she's in the room by herself, and she challenges him. And this is what she says to this Ouija board spirit. If you're so strong, if you can do all these things, and she claims that it threatens to kill her, then she tells it, you prove it. Prove it. And he did. Now, they're in the dorm, and I don't want to tell you exactly what happens at the very end, but the entire dorm is evacuated within seconds, minutes. I'm talking about snap your fingers. So that's what happened. That near the end, she is sitting at the end of that hall in that room by herself, Indian style on the floor, and she's sitting there and she's playing that board. You know, it's probably 9:30, 10 o'clock, and nobody's around. Nobody, not everybody has come back to the dorm and to turn in to go to bed. But the dorm, there were a lot of people, though, that were in their rooms. And she just told it. She said, if you're so strong, then just prove it. Because, you know, he would say things to her. I can do this, and I can do that, and I can show you. And she just challenged it. She challenged it, and there it was, and Bobby came on the scene, and emergency personnel came on the scene. And after that finale, as I call it, as to the Ouija board incident was over, because, you know, the board was thrown into a fire. But at the very end, and a little bit after that happened, people kind of went their own separate ways, and it was really strange. There was a calm and a stillness that came over the campus there, for a little while after that happened. It was real odd. And then, of course, the holidays, and the campus was quiet. And then by the next semester, it was just like, you know, it was strange. It was like all hell breaking loose and this going on, and it was just wild. It was absolutely wild.
With her being the main character here and the main focus of the conversation with the spirit, and you said everybody kind of going their own way, what specifically happened with her afterwards? It was, and you said the board was burned eventually. Sometimes that always doesn't end the story. What happened with her, if anything, after that incident?
Well, what we know of her, it was within just like 2 or 3 days. She packed up everything that she had, which wasn't much, being there in the dorm, and put it into her car and left. People never saw her again. Left school, dropped out, whatever you want to call it. She was gone. Nobody heard from her. I have never seen her since. And it was interesting, though, she was from this area, you know, the area that the story is about, and we all kind of were. But I believe there was a phone call that she placed to her mother. Her mother was actually, like I said, she was miles, thousands of miles away. And the last that I heard is that we all thought, and I'm saying I think because this is what I had heard, is that she went to be with her mom. So if she joined her mom and got a plane ticket and what she did with their clothes and all that, I don't know. But nobody heard from her ever since. The rest of them kind of went on and they led their lives and that kind of thing. But this one kind of like disappeared overnight. When that was over with, and it was all, you can imagine the rumors at that point. You can just imagine when there's emergency personnel and all this stuff, and the rumors were already circulating around the campus about this, and then you have this big event that happens toward the end. She kind of like bails out. Very interesting, though, just kind of zombie-like. It's too bad. But, you know, I kind of looked at that and I thought, yep, the spirit, he won. He's destroyed. He has gotten her to play, to keep on and keep on and keep on. To now, she's created a big mess. And she's got nowhere to go. She's just made a mess of all these weeks and being in school. And this was her first year at, you know, in college. And, oh, my gosh. I mean, it's just like it's just destroyed anything good that could have come out of her experience there. So who knows what happened to her?
Did anyone else from that circle, from that group that was aware or was involved with any of this, ever have any more interactions or feel any repercussions from that time after it was done?
Not that I'm aware of. They felt like they felt relief from being away from it. It was kind of like there was finally an ending. Mm-hmm. Kind of like when she left the picture and moved away or left or wherever she went. And the board, in other words, it was destroyed to the point where she couldn't play with that particular board anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, and she had put herself in a position to where, I don't want to say it, but, you know, she could have been forcefully told to, you've got to leave. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to live around her or be around her anymore. But as far as I know, Nate, he went on. He was fine. Spencer was fine. Spencer had an incident where he got hurt in the story, and that's where that you'll see that after his experience with the Ouija board spirit, or whatever a spirit that we believe was brought about by the Ouija board, that kind of changed his thinking a little bit, a lot really. And but Nate came from a family that he had grown up in kind of a religious background. So he went on to a senior college and he was fine. And, you know, of course, Josie, that was very interesting. You'll see in the book where I've written about the different ones, Josie ended up quitting. She held on for just a few more weeks and that was about it. But it's just really, it seemed a little bit sad that particular incident just really, it was damaging, I think. I don't see anything good that came out of that situation at all. And when we all did research before, of course, years ago, we were never able to identify anyone who had committed suicide. Interesting enough, though, fast forward years later, and I think it was around 1995 or 1996, there was a young man who was in his car in the parking lot near the location where Ryan Banks said that he shot himself. This young man shot and killed himself on the campus in that car. But he's the only known person that there's any record of anybody doing that. Mm-hmm. So, and supposedly it was because he was battling he had lost his younger brother, and he was battling depression and grief and that kind of thing. Sure. But tragic thing, yeah. Tragic stories.
That wraps up our interview with L. Sidney Fisher. I want to thank her for being a guest today on The Grave Talks. And thank you for being a supporter of the program and helping to keep our program on the air. We cannot do the show without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.